guy you'd really like. He wears women's clothes and he powders his nose, and he wears high heels with a spike. We dress up and go out when he comes to visit. Some people stare and say, what is it? Uncle Mike is different, but that's all right with me. I just know that I love him. I hope you agree. Sometimes Mike likes to be called Michelle. We talk about my problems and he says, do tell. He really listens to what I have to say. We talk and talk and talk and talk and talk the whole day. Someday he'll become Michelle for good and never go back to he. He says he always felt like her. It's what he's supposed to be. Confusing, but I'm trying to understand what happens when Uncle Mike is no longer a man. One thing that I know for real is how it's gonna make him feel. It's something that he really wants. So instead of an uncle, I'll have an aunt. He's a funny guy you'd really like. He wears women's clothes and he powders his nose, and he wears high heels with a spike. We dress up and go out when he comes to visit. Some people stare and say, what is it? Uncle Mike is different, but that's all right with me. I just know that I love him. I hope you agree.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this month I'm bringing you part 4 of my latest series on the music of transgendered artists, and it will include a very special interview. Now, if that song I used to start out the show sounded to you like a children's song, well, it is. In 2005, Susie Nash released an album called Rainbow Sprinkles. Its subtitle was Songs for Our Children, Celebrating Our Diverse Lives, and it was designed to empower the children of GLBT families. I think I've got a very interesting feature interview for you for this show with jazz musician Jennifer Lightham, who's been making great music on her stand-up bass since the late 70s. Before we get to that, I want to bring you some other transgendered artists. And first up is Ray Spoon. He's a Canadian artist with 3 CDs out now, and I'm sharing a track from his 2005 CD called Your Trailer Door. The song is called Don't Turn On Me.
Honey, I ain't got no reason to believe. It's a crime. It's the biggest little problem in the world.
But share with you one more song from them, also from that album, called Tennessee Tranny Two-Step.
The Baptists all line up for church on Saturdays. They block the road in their Sunday clothes. Just 2.5 more miles to the main highway. Well, it's 10 o'clock and I'm late to see my girl. She's a waitress down at Kathy's Cafe. The one who time. The catfish, it ain't nothing to write home about.
Next up is a track from another new recording, and while the artist is not transgendered, the subject matter is. Jeff Heiskell was the leading force behind the band The Judy Bats, who had a number of releases starting in the early 1990s. He's now fronting a new band, just called Heiskell, and I find the song you'll hear very intriguing. It follows his observations of a young boy and the boy's journey to become an Atlanta drag queen and future transsexual known as the Death of Knoxville Cool.
Trolling in the park today, I spied a little boy so fey. His mother's misty eyes meet mine. This instant where we both divide.
Again, that was the band Heiskell from their new album, Soundtrack for an Aneurysm. I've been a fan of this next artist since her 1997 album, All I Want, and on my November 2005 show, I featured a wonderful interview with her. She's Veronica Klaus, and she recently sent me an advance copy of an album by her called Family Jewels, The Making of Veronica Klaus. That's the title of her award-winning show in San Francisco, and is her story set to music connected with dialogue. I'm very pleased to share with you a little bit of it. Veronica Klaus.
Well, you might as well know, I wasn't always Veronica. I had another name, but it was never really mine. At least I never felt like it was. It was something, well, Just another thing I was called. I'd tell you that name, but then you'd save it in your head and hear it whispered in your ear every time you looked at me. I don't need that. This is no illusion. If I told you that other name, you'd be tempted to think that that other person was who I really am, when in fact, that other person was much more of an illusion. When I had first started to sing in San Francisco, to put together a band and become comfortable in my own skin, Veronica's skin, I met a musician who was intrigued by me. Intrigued enough to come to my boudoir, but nervous enough to need too many cocktails to do it. At one point in the evening, after sex and before he asked me for money, saxophone players have no shame, he gave me a tape of an obscure Nina Simone song, suggesting it was the perfect song for me to sing. I politely said, "Thank you," and gave him $20. Some people reach for the stars. Others may end up behind bars. What the future has in store, no one ever knows for sure. But we must all have the right to find that key to success. All that elusive tomorrow is my turn, no more doubts, no more fears. Tomorrow is my turn, when my luck is returning. All these years I've been learning to save fingers from burning. Tomorrow is my turn, no more doubts, no more fears. Tomorrow is my turn, to receive without giving, to make life worth a living. Now it's my life I'm living, my only concern for tomorrow is my turn. Whenever summer is gone, there's another to come. You can't stop the years from drifting. I've been learning to keep fingers from burning. Tomorrow is my turn, no more doubts, no more fears. Tomorrow is my turn, to receive without giving, to make life worth a living. Now it's my life I'm living, my only concern. People ask me if I feel like a woman. They talk about having the best of both worlds, or assume that I must have some sort of divine knowledge or acute insight into what makes men and women tick, having, as they see it, seen both sides. The truth is, I feel a little badly not being able to give them that key. You see, having lived this life has not given me any insight into men and women that would sell books or get me on Oprah. Do I feel like a woman? The truth is, I have no idea if I feel like any other woman or not. I have no idea if I ever felt like any other man. All I know is that I feel like me, Veronica.
alarming. Yo, it's alarming how charming I feel. Such a pretty smile, such a pretty dress, such a pretty face, such a pretty me. I feel stunning, oh so stunning. Feel like running and dancing, you see. 'Cause that picture,
that short excerpt definitely does not do justice to Veronica Klaus's show. If you can't make it to San Francisco to see her, you'll just have to get the whole album to experience it. Again, that was from Family Jewels, The Making of Veronica Klaus.
Hello, this is Veronica Klaus, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
You can find out more about her at www.veronicaklaus.com.
The homosexual, it is true, at times does adopt the clothing or the makeup of a woman to lure members of his own sex. But this is not so for the transvestite. The transvestite is not interested in those of their own sex. The clothing is not worn to attract the attention of their own sex, but to eliminate themselves from being a member of that sex. Then comes the major surgery. The removal of the man and the formation of the woman. A woman born at the age of 24.
A new life is begun.
The body of the woman within begins to appear now. The world is shocked by a person who changed his sex. Thus, the strange case of Glenn, who was Glenda, one and the same person, not half man, half woman, but nevertheless, man and woman in the same body. He dares to enter the street dressed in the clothes he so much desires to wear.
Glenn is engaged to be married to Barbara. Glenn's problem is a deep one, but he must tell her soon. She's begun to notice things. Soon she will realize. He learned that foreign doctors were doing marvelous work with a sex change. Man to woman, woman to man.
Glenda has made the decision.
If the newspapers had not gotten hold of the story, it would have gone untold, unnoticed as so many others in medical history.
Why is the modern world shocked by this headline? Why?
Do you realize what would happen if every man in the country that wanted to wear women's clothes or felt like a woman went to their doctors and wanted a sex change?
Glenn and all the hundreds of thousands of other Glens across the nation face quite a problem.
So goes part of the trailer for the schlocky 1953 movie, Glenn or Glenda, directed by and starring Ed Wood. We've come a long way. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to my friend Jimmy Carper and his show After Hours every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Okay, pay attention not to the singer on this next song, but the bass player.
Glow, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Fly through the wintry night, little swimmer. Let not the neon make you duller. Sparkle and shine in technicolor. Although the thought may still be rankling, you made the scene before Ben Franklin. Rev up your amps and let her go. glow, little glowworm, glow.
Now, why on earth would I be playing Glowworm by Mel Torme on Queer Music Heritage? Well, again, I'm not really focusing on Mel, but on the bass player who worked with him for 10 years. That's jazz musician Jennifer Lightham, who before 2002 was John Lightham. Since 1979, this artist has performed with a who's who of the jazz world, from Woody Herman, George Shearing, Doc Severinsen, Peggy Lee, Cleo Lane, and on and on. You've got to be pretty talented to work for that long in those circles. Her very public transition was difficult enough without also facing the unknown reception she would get in the less than liberal jazz world. That hasn't slowed her down, though, as she just released her sixth album, and that's where I started my interview with Jennifer Lightham. Tell me about the album The Real Me.
Well, The Real Me is my sixth CD. It's the first one to bear my true identity, Jennifer Lightham, and I'm very proud of it. It's all original music. It's got a couple of vocals on it, but it's mostly accessible jazz. It's jazz that people that like rock or classical or folk music, they all seem to like this record, and again, I'm very proud of it.
One review I've read says that you've earned the reputation as a swinging, straight-ahead player. What does that expression mean?
Well, I guess the more famous people that I've played with have been people like Mel Torme and Doc Severinsen, and in playing their style of music, I have to pretty much play a very classic approach to playing the string bass, and you know, the quarter note right down the middle of the beat, and play driving bass lines, and that I guess would be a straight ahead swinging kind of player. And I've always been blessed with a very good sense of time, and I've worked really hard at that, so where that my bass never wavers. I never slow down or speed up. You know, I'm pretty consistent with that. And it makes me popular amongst those people that you know, want a real solid support from the bass player. I feel like I do a lot more than just that, but that one particular quote is attributed about me.
From reading about you, I've noticed that with your music, you do at least three things out of the ordinary. You're a woman playing an upright bass, you play lead or melody, and you play left-handed.
Yes to all three. I think it all stems from my being, who I am. I chose to play the bass basically because it just felt like it was right. It felt like it was part of me. And I just did it my way right from the beginning, and I've tried to live my life that way too, just be who I am. And it's taken a long time, but I'm finally able to express all of me. And it's always come through the bass, and I'm playing left-handed is unusual because it's difficult to find an instrument that is proper for a left-handed player on the string bass, because not only do the strings have to be reversed, but the entire bass has to be taken apart and rebuilt so that it resonates properly. So for a left-handed player who strings it left-handed, the E string has to be on the opposite side, the A string, and so forth. And so it's almost like the bass goes through a reassignment, almost like I did in my surgery. The bass went through, reassignment surgery as well.
I don't want to get too far into this interview without touching on particular songs, so I'll ease into that this way. You've released six albums since 1989. Which one brought you the most attention, and any idea why?
Oh, good question. The second and third one, the second one was the Southpaw, and I had a really wonderful bunch of musicians on that with me, but it was probably the last studio record for Bob Cooper. He was a tenor saxophone player that played with Stan Kenton's band, was married to June Christie. He was a great man. He was like a father figure to me. And it was his last recording, I think, studio recording, and that record has sort of become a collector's item because of that. And some of my compositions from that record, I started to get noticed for my songwriting on that record. There was a tune I wrote in there called Turkish Bazaar, and another one, Stick It In Your Ear. and I re-recorded those tunes on The Real Me. And part of the reason is some of those older records, like the following record after that was Lefty Leaps In, and one of the tunes from that record, the Studio City Stomp, is probably the most popular song that I've ever written. It's gotten a lot of play around the world, and it's actually a hit tune in Norway. It's been in a number of television shows and things. It's quite a popular song for me. And I re-recorded that one as well on The Real Me. Partially, I took some of my, partially because I took some of my more popular music, re-recorded it under my proper identity. So now when radio people want to play my songs, they can play them and not have to be fumbling on the name. They can just say the right name.
Right. So Studio City Stomp is perhaps your best known track?
I would say so, yeah. Of all the things I've written, yeah.
Here's a little of Studio City Stomp. That song was originally on the 1996 album Lefty Leaps In, but this version came from the new release, The Real Me. You've performed with a who's who of notables, including Mel Torme, George Shearing, Peggy Lee, Doc Severinsen, Jerry Mulligan. That's pretty amazing success. Looking back on those years, does anything stand out to you as a crowning moment?
Oh my goodness, there are many. There were several with Mel Torme that just I'll never forget. One of them was playing the Bumper Shoot Festival in Seattle, which was quite an exciting venue. It was a giant arena it was filled with about 55,000 people. And the Bumper Shoot Festival is interesting in that there's all kinds of music happening on the same stage. And so it's not just jazz acts on the big stage. We were the opening act for the Ramones and Mudhoney. And it was Mel Torme, you know, and it was right about the time when he had done the Mountain Dew commercial and MTV was paying attention to Mel and I'd been on a Night Court show with him and he was riding a wave of popularity. The people just went crazy for us. I felt like a rock star. It was about the time when mosh pits were a big thing and crowd diving and everything. And all of that was going on while we were singing Stardust, you know. It was really quite an interesting experience. That was a high point. Also, the first time we played Carnegie Hall with Mel was quite an exciting experience. I played there 10 times with him. And it was always like you got goosebumps just being backstage and knowing the history of the place you were in and having the, you know, being called to perform on that stage where all these amazing historical concerts took place. That was a big thrill.
Have you done much television?
Yeah, I've done a fair amount. I mean, with Doc, Doc Severinsen did a number of TV things. I was on The Tonight Show one time. I was on a lot of PBS specials with Mel. The last television thing that Mel did, it was a week before he had a stroke, was for the Arts and Entertainment Channel. But that was one of them. I've been on a number of shows.
In recent years, you've gone from playing with other bands to having your own trio. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I've always kept a group. I was leading groups back in the 80s, but after transitioning, I was in a kind of a state where the jazz community, per se, wasn't calling me. I was being totally avoided. And I was at one time going to give up. I wasn't even going to play music anymore. But I just couldn't go without playing music. It's just who I am. And leading my own band has been sort of my salvation as far as putting it out there that I'm still a capable player and I'm a fairly well-adjusted human being, you know. And I think it's broken down a lot of the walls that people put up after I transitioned. Wherever I get booked, like when we're booked at, you know, your normal type jazz festivals with all of, you know, your average type people around, people dig the music, and that's what it's about.
On your new album is a track called The Altered Blues. Could you tell me about that one?
Oh, that one is a deep one. I wrote that song for my surgeon. His name's Dr. Alter. And I wrote the song that tries to deal musically with the subject of the gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder, whatever the medical profession wants to call it. This notion of having something in your brain that just will not go away. You don't want it there. Nobody asked for it. But it won't go away. And, I mean, the whole key to dealing with it and having a decent enough life is to learn how to make music with it. And I try to do that musically through the Altered Blues, where there are these two notes, D and G. And it's like, oh, they're just notes that just are in every chord, and they won't go away. And so the idea is to take those two notes in those chords, and the chords change all around, but those notes stay. And just try to make some kind of coherent musical beauty out of it. And it's a challenge, but I think we made it work.
Could you make maybe some more observations about the changes in the way people treated you after your surgery?
Well, the jazz world, you would think, would be a very creative environment. Be like very artistic people who would be pretty open-minded, you would think. But unfortunately, the commercial jazz world is populated at the entrepreneurial level by very conservative people. And they were not willing to give me a shake. Several of them fulfilled their contracts after I had transitioned, and they had already booked me for festivals and things. I fulfilled the contracts. I did the job competently. The audience seemed to really like what I did, but I wasn't asked back in a lot of cases. And so that's been very difficult. The jazz musician world, I kind of learned who my friends were, you know, who really was really my friends and really respected my musicianship, and those who were just shining me on. So it sort of weeded out a lot of the dead wood as far as my career goes. And I've formed new circles, and some of the old people from my previous existence are still in my career and in my life. But I made a new path. I got away from the negative people who were pretty much shunning me, and I just didn't even try to win their approval. But gradually, the more I stick my nose out there, the better it's getting. If I shirk away from them, I let them win. You know, so I just sort of do what I do, and the more I show people that I'm okay with everything, then they become a little more okay with me.
You've had about 5 years to observe this. Do you think the jazz world in general is more accepting now than previously?
Well, I've created my own little corner of the jazz world. I by no means feel that I'm of an echelon that I can go out and book myself at major festivals yet. That's what my goal is someday, is to be an entity that can tour with my own group. I don't know that that's ever going to be possible, but whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to forge my own path, whether it's in the jazz world or whether it's in another kind of world. I don't know.
I imagine you had a lot of fears about the impact of your transitioning on your career.
Totally. Like I say, I was ready to walk away from a musical career. I didn't think that was going to be possible. It took me a long time to get over that fear that I was going to lose my career. It's one reason why it took me until I was 48 years old to transition. I was scared to death. I love to play music. It drives me more than anything. And I was afraid I was going to lose that. And it took me a long time to just be willing to face the fear and go through with it. And again, I was ready to walk away. I thought I would have to at one point, but leading my group again has been the thing that has kept my head up. And
it's probably empowering too.
Quite, because I can control what I say. I can control what I look like, you know. And it's really been a great forum for me.
Well, from your photos, you look pretty good.
Oh, thank you. You should have seen me when I was a teenager.
Let's get to another song from your new album. I think Beat the Meatles is an inspired track. Could you tell me about that one?
I wrote that song on my computer. I wanted to do a tune on the real me that harkens back to my days in elementary school when I was a Beatle freak. But I just wanted to put a little tribute to the Beatles, so I took just snippets of Beatle melodies and Beatle background figures. And I started messing around. I'd write like a phrase, like a little bar phrase or a bar and a half phrase. And I would just like make a quilt out of it on the staff. I would put Beatle things underneath from other tunes and juxtapose melodies on the top staff. And I just kind of sewed together this quilt of Beatle stuff. And then I give it that title. A nonsense title, but it's fun.
What advice would you give other trans musicians?
Oh, boy. Well, as with everybody in life, all of us are so different. And it's hard to just lump us all together. There's so many different styles of music and so many different ways of approaching being a trans person. I never think of myself as a trans person. I don't know if that's the right thing to say or not, but I mean, it's certainly reminded. I'm reminded of it all the time, but I'm just a person. And in approaching my music and my career, I'm a musician first. The music is what is important. My being transsexual is not the major focus. It's not the thing I want to project as the main thing. Obviously, people are paying attention to me because of it. But the point I want to get across is that the music is my competence is far more important. And that's the thing I want to get out there more than anything, is the fact that I'm a competent musician. And anyone who's approaching a career in music as a trans person, you've got to be as strong a player and a strong individual and just put your best foot forward at all times. And of course, you're going to be judged for being a trans person, but if what you're putting out there as your art is not the strongest possible thing, you'll be like a wounded fish in the water to a bunch of hungry sharks, you know.
Since you're so out about your transition, do you have any feelings that at points you're an activist?
Oh goodness. Well, I'm an activist in that I guess you could say maybe because I'm open, but there are so many people who are really true activists that that go to lobby Congress and they take on court battles, and they're far more activists than I am. If I can be an activist in any way, it's just to prove the point that trans people are no different than anyone else. We, you know, I don't ask for any special favors because I'm a trans person. I want people to think of me as a good musician, you know, and really good at what I do. That's far more important to me.
Good answers. I want to ask some questions about particular songs. Is there a song that seems to be the biggest crowd pleaser?
That's a good question. Well, Studio City Stomp is my big hit, you know, and people always react to that. But I think gradually I wrote this song a long time ago called Split Brain. And it's on my very first record. And at the time, my ex kind of labeled it Split Brain. And, I was married to a woman for a long time. We were married close to 20 years. And she had a degree in experimental psychology. And this is we met back in 1980. And she thought that at the time that my problem was because I had a split brain. Like one side wasn't communicating with the other. And actually, I'm ambidextrous, so it kind of proves that I'm an integrated brain, not a split brain, because you know you have right left issues in your brain controlling one side of the body and all that. And so my being ambidextrous proves I don't have a split brain. But anyway, as I'm doing the real me, I'm throwing in little pieces of my original music from different periods, and that tune just struck out as something I wanted to speak to. And I wrote a lyric for it, and I sing it now. And now it means something completely different. But it's I'm very proud of the lyric I wrote for that song.
I took a ride out on the freeway. I took the long way trying to get home. But you know it's a drive I shouldn't have to make. The road was too long, the path was a song, it's too much to take. Why did the one side want to dominate? Why did the other hide in plain sight? I knew it wasn't a choice. The deep is no fun to make it all right. But I was the only one to see it all from the start. Kept it inside, went for the ride, didn't know why in my heart. You came and we decided just to put it away and pretend it was a game. It wasn't cool to ban the moon and go to school to learn that life isn't in your name. Now that the Nexus is behind me, I take no joy in love. They're gone, but now it's a whole new world of wonder. You know the mind is a key, the happiness free, there's no one to blame.
I think this is the first CD that you've sung on. What prompted that?
Well, it's stereotypical that a woman that plays the bass has to sing. And I figure, hey, I'm in this genre, I better sing. And I used to sing, actually, when I'm just being serious. When I was in high school, I didn't play an instrument. I sang in the choir. So my singing voice was actually my first instrument. And at that time, I was very serious about it. I developed a fairly good singing voice. And my voice was really high in those days. And I was singing solos in the choir and whatnot. And rock and roll bands noticed my high singing voice. And I was recruited by some of these rock bands to have me sing and lead vocals and sing high harmony parts. And I sort of started playing the bass because I picked up an electric bass and I had a knack for just noodling around on bass lines. I could hear a thing on a record and play it on the electric bass. And I played it left-handed because it just felt good. And never realizing that it was going to become a lifelong thing. And then that point, I started to take string bass lessons as well, and the string bass sort of became dominating in my life. And at that time, I was nervous about my voice. My voice was always really high back then, even higher than it is now. And when I sang, I sounded like a girl. My paranoia kind of got the better of me, and I stopped singing. And for close to 30 years, I stopped singing. And I've always sung in the shower, you know, sung along with my records, and particularly my Joni Mitchell records. I've always sung along with her stuff. And now I'm singing along with my Indigo Girls records, and it's always women vocalists I sing along with. And I just like singing, and it just seemed like a nice time to break out my voice again.
Lefty Leaps In seems to be one of your standards.
That was from the CD of the same name. That was the name of my third CD, Lefty Leaps In, and that was one that got played on the radio back in the day a lot, so I wanted to re-record that one as well, and Josh plays the heck out of that, my piano player, and so I wanted to put that one and get the right name on it.
Any future projects you'd like to talk about?
Oh, there are so many things I want to do. I want to write more original music. I have a few things that I'm working on. I have so much music that's written of other people's music that I've been writing arrangements for years. I did, about 12 years ago, I did a small group treatment of West Side Story that's never been recorded. And my trio performs that stuff.
That sounds wonderful.
And we get a lot of requests for it, and it's quite popular. And I'd like to record that someday. I'd like to record a record of all vocals. Oh, many things. I've had a lot of people bugging me to record solo bass. I did a solo bass tune on the tune called Out of This World on Two for the Road, and then I did Kenny's song on The Real Me. And I've had people bugging me. The bass geeks want me to put out a all bass record. Yeah, I mean, if I had unlimited funding, I could put 6 records out next week, you know. But you have to sort of plan ahead and get the finances in order, and before you decide to go ahead with anything, it's hard to decide.
Is there any questions I should have asked you?
Goodness. Well, you know, one thing that I have not really talked about too much is that what you were asking me something about trans. But what I could offer to trans musicians, and I think in a general way, trans people who are dealing with the media, whereas when a trans person transitions, it seems like all of the media people want to talk to that person that's in to the early stages of transitioning or just before surgery. And once a person has transitioned and has been living successfully and is pretty much assimilated and fairly well adjusted, it seems like the media doesn't want to pay any attention to those people. And part of it is because trans people that have assimilated, most of them want to be stealth and they don't want you to know about their past. But there are more and more people who are coming out who just don't even want to bother with trying to be stealth. And who aren't ashamed of any of it and don't really care to hide it. And those kind of folks are not getting the same kind of media attention as, you know, the Susan Stantons of the world. And it seems like the mass media wants to jump on the angst. They feed off of that angst about it. And they're not really showing that, hey, this can be a really happy story, you know? They want to focus on the broken families and the job loss and the discrimination. But when somebody gets to the other side and they can successfully transition and the hormones take their full effect and you've had the surgery and you feel so much better and you feel great, and that doesn't get covered very much. So, like, unfortunately, the whole subject matter of the transsexual in the media, they generally cover more the court battles and the custody battles amongst parents and the job loss and all that. It's not, they don't tell the happy stories.
We're winding down the interview, and by the way, you can find out more about Jennifer Lightham and her music at www.jenniferlightham.com. And Lightham is spelled L-A-I-T-H-A-M.
Hi, this is Jennifer Lightham, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Jennifer Lightham for the wonderful interview. And there was much more from the interview that I just could not fit in the radio version of this show, so my internet listeners can hear a little longer show with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. We talked earlier about how the album, The Real Me, is the first to feature Jennifer on vocals as well as bass, and one of my favorite tracks from the album gives you an excellent taste of that. Closing the show is Jennifer Lightham and Stick It In Your Ear.
Remember when the sounds you heard were crisp and clear? The melody and harmony were soothing to hear. But nowadays music seems designed to give you only fear. Well, stick it in your ear. The times have changed and romance is a thing of the past. Cro-Magnon ways and dog-eat-dog pervade to the last. I wish there was a way to keep from crying in your beer. Well, stick it in your ear. The time was when all you heard was melody and harmony in sync with the dance. Nowadays, the medium hasn't a chance till the last, but then it's the past. So I hope that there's a way to rise above the crowd. Some future generation will make us all again proud of those who came before, who didn't pander to their fear. Stick it in your ear. Sync with the dance. Nowadays, chance. The medium hasn't a chance till the last, but then it's the past. So I hope that there's a way to rise above the crowd. Some future generation will make us all again proud of those who came before, who didn't pander to their fear. We'll stick it in your ear. I'll stick it in your ear. I'll stick it in your ear.